Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Sorry about that. I'll never do it again. We're talking about part 3, chapter 19, and there is a whopping two comments about this here chapter. Is it a bad idea for Vronsky to go to a moneylender, and what are your thoughts on his debts? It wasn't a very interesting chapter, just talking about all the different debts he's got and how he plans to pay them off, and kind of makes me just, I don't know, like, debt. The thought of being in debt and having a financial plan to pay them off, and it's just not particularly pleasant, is it? I Am a Norwegian says, not too long ago I read Poor Folk, where the characters are fretting about kopecks and single rubles as if they were diamonds. Crime and Punishment starts out with the main character pawning off some of his most valuable possessions for a couple of rubles. His mother has a yearly stipend of a little over 100 rubles. And Vronsky has debts adding up to 17,000. He doesn't really have any choice. He has to pay off his short-term debt. But still, the sums blow my mind in comparison to the earlier books we've read. Yeah, these people are rich. Rich dickheads. That's what they are, rich dickheads. Swim said the mum and fishy said it's probably a worse idea to go to his mother. In response to the question of what do you think of him going to the moneylender. Question two was, what are your thoughts on his debts? It takes a lot of money to run around in high society and be a gentleman officer. Steve is selling off his wife's dowry and inheritance to maintain his highfalutin lifestyle. It is to Vronsky's credit he is willing to make economies and that he is not scrounging around for a rich heiress. I love that the chapter sort of went down like this. Oh no, I've got some debts to pay. Better pay them. There we go. Like, it's not really debt if you can just pay it. I mean, he does have to go to a moneylender to pay it, so, but then that's just replacing a debt with another one. I suppose it's replacing a short-term debt with a long-term debt, which makes sense, I suppose. And then, but then that long-term debt he just pays off with money that he just kind of gets. He does have a job. He does work, so I'm making it sound like he just gets money for nothing, but yeah. Rich folks. It's really not that much to fret over. You've got a few little debts. Just pay them. Let's read chapter 20. It's going to be fantastic. You're going to love this. It goes like this. Vronsky was particularly fortunate in that he had a code of rules which clearly defined that what should and should not be done. This code covered a very small circle of conditions, but it was unquestionable, and Vronsky, never going beyond that circle, never for a moment hesitated to do what had to be done. The code categorically determined that, though the card sharper must be paid, the tailor need not be, that one may not lie to a man, but might to a woman, that one must not deceive anyone except a husband, that one must not forgive an insult but may insult others, and so on. These rules might be irrational and bad, but they were absolute, and in complying with them, Vronsky felt at ease and could carry his head high. Man's got to have a code, I suppose. Only quite lately, in reference to his relations to Anna, had he begun to feel that his code did not quite meet all circumstances, and that the future presented doubts and difficulties for which he had no guiding principle. His present relations to her and her husband were clear and simple to him. They were very clearly and exactly defined in the code of rules by which he was guided. She was a respectable woman who had given him her love, and he loved her. Therefore, she was for him a woman worthy of as much or even more respect than a legitimate wife. He would have let his hand be cut off before he would have allowed himself by word or hint to insult her or fail to show her all the respect that a woman can possibly desire. His relations towards society were also clear. Everyone might know or suspect, but no one must dare to speak about the matter, or he was prepared to silence the speaker and make him respect the non-existent honour of the woman he loved. His relations to her husband were simplest of all. From the moment that Anna gave him her love, he considered his own right to her indefeasible. Her husband was only a superfluous person and a hindrance. No doubt he was in a pitiable position, but what was to be done? The only right the husband had was, weapon in hand, to demand satisfaction, and that Vronsky, from the first, was prepared to give him. But latterly, new inner relations had sprung up between himself and her, which frightened him by their indefiniteness. Only yesterday she had told him that she was pregnant, and he felt that this news and what she expected of him called for something that was not fully defined by his code of rules. He was taken by surprise, and at the moment when she told him of her condition, his heart had suggested his proposal to her to leave her husband. He had made this proposal, but now, thinking it over, he saw clearly that it would be better to avoid that plan, and yet, while he told himself so, he feared that this might be wrong. When I told her to leave her husband, that meant that she should unite herself with me. Am I ready for that? How can I take her away now that I have no money? No doubt I could arrange that, but how could I go away with her while I am in the army? Having proposed it, I must be ready to carry it out. That is to say, I must find the money and leave the army. He pondered. The question of whether to leave or not to leave the army led him to another private matter, almost the chief thought, though the secret interest of his life. Ambition was the old motive of his childhood and youth, one which he did not acknowledge even to himself, but which was so strong a passion that it now struggled against his love. His first steps in society and in the service had been successful, but 2 years ago he had made a bad blunder. Wishing to show his independence and to get promotion, he had refused a post that was offered him, hoping that this refusal would enhance his value. But it turned out that he had been too bold and he was passed over. Having then perforce to assume the role of an independent character, he played it very adroitly and cleverly, as though he had no grudge against anyone, but did not feel himself at all offended and only wished to be left in peace to enjoy himself. In reality, he had begun to feel dissatisfied about the time that he went to Moscow the year before. He felt that the role... Oh my God, excuse me. He felt that the role of the independent man who could have anything but wanted nothing was beginning to pall, and that many people were beginning to think he could never do anything more than be an honest, good-natured fellow. His intrigue with Anna Karenina, which had caused such a sensation and attraction to so much notice in society, by investing him with fresh glamour, had for a while quieted the worm of ambition that had gnawed him. But a week ago that worm had reawakened with fresh vigour. A playmate of his childhood and his fellow pupil at the cadet corps, Serpukhovsky, who belonged to the same social circle, and who had finished the same year as himself, and had been his rival in the classroom, at gymnastics, in mischief and in ambitious dreams, had just returned from Central Asia, where he had gained 2 steps in official rank and had won a distinction rarely awarded to so young a general. As soon as he reached Petersburg, people began to talk about him as a rising star of the first magnitude. Of the same age as Vronsky and his messmate, Serpukhovsky, bless you, was already a general expecting an appointment that might have an influence on state affairs, while Vronsky, though independent and brilliant and beloved by an enchanting woman, remained only a cavalry captain and was allowed to be as independent as he pleased. Of course, I am not jealous and could not be jealous of Serpukhovsky, bless you, but his promotion shows me that if one bides one's time, the career of such a man as myself may be very quickly made. 3 years ago, he and I were in the same position. If I retire, I burn my boats. By remaining in the service, I lose nothing. She herself said that she did not want to change her position, and I, having her love, cannot envy Serpukhovsky. Bless you. And slowly twisting his mustache, he rose from the table and walked across the room. His eyes shone with peculiar brightness, and he felt that firm, calm and joyful mood which always came when he had cleared up the situation. Everything was clear and distinct as after his former periodical stock takings. He shaved, had a cold bath, dressed, and went out. And that's that. Another chapter down. Have your say about that one over on the subreddit. I will get out of your hair and leave you to your day now. Thank you for listening, and I hope to see you tomorrow.